Jill Vecchio, you are one of the foremost experts on healthcare in America. You were one of the few individuals that actually read the complete ACA legislation, which I don't know how you did it, Jill.
Took a long time, a lot of coffee, and and a lot of outrage. It was driven by pure outrage.
But what do you think, Jill? I mean, I'm excited because, you know, Congress couldn't get it done. They told us they were going to get it done, and they didn't. But now this judge in Texas has ruled the ACA, Obamacare, unconstitutional without the individual mandate. What do you think that means?
Well, it's interesting because I read the 55-page it's Judge Reed O'Connor in Texas, District Court of Texas, and that's in the Fifth Circuit Court. And I read his 55-page opinion last night. It's very well written, kind of redundant, but it's easy for people to read. And he gives a lot of background. So he gives you the background you need. So if anybody's really interested in getting on the guts of it, it's very well written. Anyway, the individual mandate is kind of like, well, why are we doing this if there's no tax? It's virtually gone. Well, it may be the tax is gone, but in his opinion, he outlines that the individual mandate, and as it was addressed in 2012 with the Supreme Court decision then, the individual mandate has two parts to it. One was the, quote, tax that they wanted to not call a tax but consider a tax legally. What was it called? Some shared responsibility payment. So they upheld that, as you remember, under Congress's authority to tax.
Right.
But the individual mandate in and of itself, so there are two separate things. There's the mandate that says everybody has to have insurance, and the Congress said, no, you can't do that. The government can't force us to purchase something. So, and they were saying it was under the Commerce Clause, and we've talked a lot about that over the years. So they said the individual mandate in and of itself was unconstitutional, but Congress could tax us with this shared responsibility payment for not having insurance under their authority to tax. So that's really what they upheld. Unfortunately, everybody said the individual mandate is constitutional. No, it wasn't. It was never ruled constitutional.
So backing up, in 2012... In 2012, that is what the Supreme Court said stands, is this shared responsibility
Correct.
Payment? Okay, got it.
Right. Okay. So the individual mandate was not upheld. And I kept saying that for a long time, but people didn't seem to want to understand the difference, and that's not what the media fed us. So the individual mandate has all, in and of itself, has always been unconstitutional. It's been ruled unconstitutional in 2012 by that Supreme Court. So this judge really is just kind of reinforcing that and taking the next step. So and part of this, why it's coming up now, is because of standing, and somebody filed another lawsuit, and thankfully they filed it in the Fifth Circuit instead of going to someplace with the Ninth Circuit Court, but they picked the right court to take it to. But now companies, states, and individuals have been affected by the individual mandate, even though the tax ramification has gone, you know, it's gone to $0.
Okay.
The penalty for the shared payment penalty is $0. But there's so much else in Obamacare, as you know, like, you know, boatloads of regulations, boatloads of new taxes, and the repercussions of what Obamacare has done to insurance premiums and Medicaid expansion and shared costs to the states and the healthcare exchanges and costs to the states for that. Now the states and individuals got together and became plaintiffs in this joint lawsuit to say, now this thing is really affecting us. Now we have standing, technical term I won't go into, but now we have standing to file this suit, whereas before they really kind of didn't. The states did based on Medicaid expansion, and that was ruled on, but that's what at least got it to the Supreme Court. But parts of this couldn't be necessarily addressed until enough entities had standing to bring it to court. So that's why it's kind of coming up now. And because, you know, well, yeah, Congress won't do anything, and that the courts aren't supposed to, you know, Congress should have voted it down, but they're not doing it. But at the same time, if there's a law that's unconstitutional, then, you know, it needs to go away. And that could be done through the courts. So with this, the individual mandate aside from the penalty and the tax and all that stuff. So let's take that out of the picture. But the individual mandate itself was already ruled unconstitutional. Now they have to say, is this severable? This is the same argument it was before, that it was moot because they said that they could still tax. So is it severable from the entire law, from the rest of Obamacare? Can you take out the individual mandate and have the rest of Obamacare stand? And in 2012, the Supreme Court said, no, it is inexplicably, it is tied, it is essential. Congress has said it's essential. Everybody supporting this said that mandate is mandatory, and it was mandatory because they needed to share the cost of health care across the whole country. So people had to purchase insurance that was far more than what they needed at a much higher price than what they needed. And if they didn't force everybody to do this, then they couldn't justify covering, they wouldn't be able to cover everybody else.
So
it was number one. Go ahead.
Well, that force component then, that individual mandate, what did this judge say, in Cliff Notes? What did he say? Why is it that unconstitutional?
Because the Commerce Clause, it was put in there, and the support initially in 2012 and now was that the Interstate Commerce Clause, part of the Constitution, allows the federal government to regulate interstate commerce.
Okay.
Well, healthcare really isn't interstate commerce, although us three examined the Interstate Commerce Clause many times, and it's been abused and bastardized many times.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to do it yet one more time and abuse it one more time. And the Supreme Court, they all agreed, all nine justices agreed that, no, the individual mandate does not fall under the Interstate Commerce
Clause. Wow.
The federal government can't force you, can't punish you for not doing something. They can't regulate non-participation in a transaction.
Wow. And so this judge down in Texas, so there were these different Republican attorney generals in these different states that they then brought this before this judge withstanding, and that's where that ruling is. So this is going to get kicked all the way out, probably up to the Supreme Court, you think?
Right. Yes. Uh-huh. Well, and understand that each court, each successive court, like the Circuit Court of Appeals, it'll be the Fifth Circuit, which is heavily, apparently, I haven't looked at the who's on it, but it sounds like from some of the press coverage that there are a lot of Trump federal judge appointees on the Fifth Circuit. But each successive court can decide whether or not they want to hear the case.
Got it.
So even though it would be sent to the level of the Supreme Court could say, no, we're not really going to hear this. We've already been over all this. But I think it would be a great opportunity for them to revisit a very controversial decision. So the Supreme Court can also, they can reverse their own decisions. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't even have to reverse the decision. They just have to revisit and make a kind of a judgment going, yeah, we already said this, and this, and now it's not severable. We already said that. So that's precedent already.
But if the higher
could be kind of a,
well, and if a, the ahead. Higher courts don't take the case, though, doesn't that ruling stand?
Yes. Well, as long as it's not struck down by a court of appeals.
Okay.
So if the court of appeals strikes it down, then it would be appealed further up, like the Supreme Court.
Okay, got it.
If the court of appeals upholds it, then it's upheld.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
And so then we're going to have to talk about then what? What's the solution? What does the next law look like? What are they going to do about health care from then on?
So let's
do that when we come back from break.
With that, Jill,
have some great solutions.
We've got politicians out there now talking about Medicare for all. I'm actually hearing conservatives that think that we need to have some kind of universal health care.
Former conservatives.
One of the sticky wickets, we've talked about it, is this pre-existing condition component. So let's go to break. Right. We're going to have to do, a lightning round on this because there's so much important information. You are such an expert. It's so great to have you on the show with us. So this is the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We will be right back with Dr. Jill Vecchio talking about healthcare.
All the classics. Welcome back to the AmeriChick Show with Molly and Kim. We are on the phone with Dr. Jill Vecchio. We're going to get to what's going to happen with pre-existing conditions. What about Medicare for all? Since this Texas judge last week just ruled Obamacare unconstitutional without the individual mandate, which we already knew about. Dr. Jill Vecchio, you know, you read the entire Obamacare bill. You were going around the country telling everybody how damaging this was going to be, how much it was going to hurt, how instead of saying you could keep your doctor, we weren't going to be able to keep our doctor. We were going to have to buy insurance that was so expensive that, and then we wouldn't even be able to really get in to see a doctor. We were going to have to buy things, coverages we didn't even need. So
and
now
deductibles, high deductibles.
Yeah. The out-of-pockets were absolutely ridiculous. I had health care. I had insurance. I never even used it. I paid for insurance and still pay out-of-pocket because my deductibles so big it doesn't really pay for me to use it anyways. So Dr. Jill Vecchio, what happens, do you think, if this is really ruled unconstitutional and Obamacare starts to fall? What about pre-existing conditions?
I am so glad that you started out this segment with exactly what you said, because I wanted to start out by saying let's really look at who the victims are, mm-hmm. because there are victims of Obamacare.
Yep.
The victims of Obamacare, we went from 20 million uninsured who were poor and uninsurable, a few self-employed who chose not to have insurance. Okay, so now we insured the uninsurable by making everybody else pay more, and it just kept getting higher and higher, and just as you said. So now the victims are people who used to have insurance but can no longer afford it, and that now there are Uber drivers, there are people all over the place that are working people contributing to society who are uninsured because of Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now that's one. Now we insured a bunch of people through Medicaid expansion. Now states are victims because, and now state taxes are increased, and that's a nightmare for states. In Colorado, something like one third of the people living in Colorado are on Medicaid.
Jeez. Yeah.
That's insane. So now we've gone from having 20 million people uninsured that are poor and blah, 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 that we have potential programs that could have been used and could have been expanded. We could have done something else about that. But now we switched it so there are at least 20 million that are still uninsured. It's just a different group of people. So with pre-existing conditions, number one thing. Why do we have pre-existing conditions? Because insurance is tied to the workplace. Number one reason, right? So you lose your mm-hmm. job. You have group insurance through your company. It doesn't matter if you have pre-existing conditions, if you have a group insurance policy. So you leave your job. You quit your job. You lose your job, but like a lot of people did under Obamacare, you know, all this stuff that happened before that, before he took office. So a lot of people ended up with a problem with pre-existing conditions because now they're on the individual market and pre-existing conditions are a problem. You're speaking to I am a person with pre-existing conditions on the individual market. I am uninsurable, most likely.
And that's scary to people.
It's very scary.
So those
I'm not going to make recommendations that I can't live with personally. You know what I mean? I'm not going to make a recommendation just because I'm sitting on a throne somewhere and saying I mandate this and blah, blah, blah. This is something that I would like to see because I would like to work it this way. So let's separate insurance from the workplace. You get an insurance policy at whatever time of your life, at birth, whatever. At some point in your life, you get an insurance policy, whether it even starts at your first job. You get to take that policy with you like a cobra, but it doesn't go away. Okay? And so you get to take that insurance policy with you. You can still change companies. You can change carriers just like your 401k. It doesn't need to be different than a 401k plan. You get to take your 401k with you, and there aren't big penalties for changing things around. So you can do that. Now pre-existing conditions are a very tiny thing. You could also change. Trump also expanded the use of risk pools, like associations like this Seed Farmers Association or Cattle Breeders Association can form a risk pool of its own and have its own insurance that its members can use. So if we expand the risk pools, now you can have a group policy, not an individual policy.
Okay.
You can have a group policy through a different risk pool through different associations. You know, expand the use of like MediShare, things like that. If you decrease the state insurance mandates, like Obamacare was expensive, those premiums were so expensive because it had so many coverages that people weren't even using. So like Molly said, you're paying for stuff you're not even using.
Right.
decrease those mandates. Let the states have more control again, like they did before Obamacare. Give the states control again. Get the mandates down so that insurance policies don't have to cover so many things. People have more money to spend on health care that they really need because they're not paying for a lot of stuff they're not going to need. Then their premiums would plummet. That means a lot more people can have insurance, catastrophic insurance. We've talked about direct care, primary care memberships. Mm-hmm. I know you guys have covered that in the past. So direct primary care memberships, I'm going to see my direct primary care doc today. So it's a great deal. It's a membership. It includes office visits. It's perfect for people with pre-existing conditions and chronic illness. People who are otherwise uninsured, now you can use health savings account money for membership in a direct primary care membership. You know, there are very few excuses. If you are so disabled, there are other programs. There are other programs through Social Security disability, Medicare disability. You don't have to be 65. You can have Medicaid and Medicare coverages. I mean, there are all kinds of options for every level of person if we can do a few basic things, like separating insurance from the workplace, decrease the state insurance or decrease the insurance mandates, expand how health savings accounts can be used, change the risk pool organization so as many people as possible can be covered under a group policy of some sort that decreases, covers pre-existing conditions and decreases overall, shares the risk so you have lower premiums. The kicker with pre-existing conditions is now you're on the individual marketplace. And that's what kills you.
And so,
because
Dr.
all the insurance company can do is look at you and what risk you present rather than you're not spreading the risk under a larger group of people.
Right. Dr. Gelvecchio, we had you on a couple months ago. You said nobody really recognized this, but Donald Trump has been lowering regulations behind the scenes. Can you just give us a quick pointer on that? Because you said
that. Oh, gosh. Okay, that's my other notes here. I'm glad I have my little notebook here. So he's allowed associations to form risk groups. Let's see. He started some health reimbursement allowance through employers that could help a few people. Let's see. Eliminated the tax penalty from the individual mandate. Mm-hmm. Let's see. He reinstated short-term limited duration plans up to 36 months. Obamacare had almost taken them away, and now it's like a little kind of a life raft for people who were potentially going on to the individual market. These are short-term policies, but now you can have one up to 3 years. Let's say you quit your job and your COBRA benefits run out because those are only good for a certain number of months after you've left a business or left a job. So now for 3 months, you can have this short-term limited duration, and they're really inexpensive, maybe like $140 a month or something, which is really good. So that's been a life raft for a lot of people. So he expanded that. Let's see here. He supports state reinsurance programs. I'm not going to go into that.
Wasn't he talking about insurance across state lines? It seems like he was talking about that. I don't know if he got that done or not.
It's been mentioned. It keeps getting mentioned. I don't think that has happened yet.
Okay.
So, I kind of hope not. You know, I have weird feelings about that.
I know. And but, that's a whole nother conversation. We've got just about a minute. Okay. This is going to be a tough one. Can you give a 1 minute response to why universal health care is not a good idea?
It bankrupts you. It's not fiscally reliable. If universal health care turns an unlimited resource into a limited resource, period. If you have universal health care, you have one little pocket of money and the government, somebody else is controlling it. So guess what? You don't have control over what's going to be covered, when it's going to be covered, who you see, when you see them. Okay? Period. You are handing control of your health and your health care decisions to somebody else.
Wow.
And to me, that's period. That's all you're doing.
Yeah.
And now there's a set resource of a set pocket of money that somebody else gets to say what you do and don't get.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, really? Come on, folks.
Look at the United Kingdom. Look at Canada. It's not fun waiting in those
lines.
It's
not working in any of those places.
Exactly.
You just don't hear about it because the message is being controlled by somebody else.
Right.
Wow. Dr. Gelvecchio. Yeah. Thank you. This was fabulous.
Thanks,
information.
Dr. Jill.
Merry Christmas.
You got me all wound up first thing in the morning.
Yeah,
right.
I know. We got our blood pressure going. So, okay, our quote for today.
Have a good day.
Is Benjamin Rush. He was a signer of the Declaration. He was a doctor, a civic leader. He says, unless we put medical freedom into the Constitution, the time will come when medicine will organize itself into an undercover dictatorship. To restrict the art of healing to doctors and deny equal privileges to others will constitute the bastille of medical science. All such laws are un-American and despotic. That's Benjamin Rush.